show.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3, the best radio station ever.
The internet is a fast, open, reliable network that is diverse, free, and allows an equal exchange of ideas. However, this reality is being challenged by monopolies in the media, as well as by decisions made on issues such as internet openness and usage-based billing. OpenMedia.ca is here to ensure that the decisions regarding the internet are fair and citizen-friendly. We engage, educate, and empower citizens on the necessity for a media communication system that adheres to the principles of democracy. For more information, visit OpenMedia.ca or follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, well, you don't know this is Tasha T, and you don't know anytime I'm in Guelph, I always tune into Nikki Dread and the Crooked Beat. Oh, you mean, man? On CFRU 93.3 FM every Thursday from 7 to 9 p.m. You don't know. We're gonna rectify the problem. Let's live and learn to solve them. We're gonna make it work together for the children. And 25 years of reggae revolution. Set it!
Action Read Community Literacy Center offers one-on-one tutoring and small group learning in reading, writing, math, and computers for adults aged 18 and over in Guelph. At Action Read, we help you identify what you're good at so you can work towards your goals. Learn skills to get the job you want, to work on personal budgets, creative writing projects, for test preparation, and to improve study skills. Our services are free and no referral is needed. If Action Read sounds like the place for you, or someone you know, contact us at 519-836-2759 or visit us on the web at actionread.com.
This is Walter Garrison, the host of Locavore, heard on CFRU 93.3 FM, broadcast out of Guelph, Ontario. So, it's August 2011, and I'm going to be doing a bit of a rant today, talking about some of the things that I've seen, looking at food issues in general, not just the local food issues, but certainly how certain things are impacting local food issues. I took a trip to Western Europe recently, specifically spent some time in Spain and Portugal. And when you take a look at the food industry and agriculture and the agri-food business and how things are done there versus here in North America, you see some striking differences. There are similarities, but some very striking differences. Certainly, the ecology is somewhat different, and depending on where you are in these two countries, everybody, at least in the rural areas, they have their own little plot of land. So they'll have their vines, and their vines typically are around stone walls or fences. growing fairly wild. They'll have their own fruit trees. They'll have fig trees, olive trees, orange trees, things that we can't necessarily have. Certainly in southern Ontario, where the show is broadcast out of here. But it is quite interesting to see that everybody has that and the diversity of what people actually have. And really, it's something that we should really think about when we look at what we do here with respect to agriculture and growing. I think it's you see it, you know, certainly some, I guess the older people that have immigrated to Canada from countries, especially in Europe, you see that with the vines and with the fruit trees that they do have, and you do see it occasionally, depending on what neighborhood you go to in Canada and in southern Ontario especially. But it's something that there in Europe is ubiquitous. It's all over the place. Everybody has got their own vines and their own trees, and they grow their own collard greens for what they call Called Verde. Very interesting. I went into a McDonald's in Guimarães, Portugal, and Guimarães is a town that's going to be the UNESCO World Heritage Site next year in 2012. And the McDonald's there actually has on the menu, it's a version or derivative of an authentic Portuguese style soup called Caldo Verde. So you think of McDonald's as this sort of monolith, this multinational, multi-billion-dollar corporation that's been around for several decades. And here what they're doing is they're, I guess, putting their own spin on, a dish that's specific to a region. Now, I didn't try the Caldo Verde. I had an espresso, which was actually quite good, amazingly. And I went in there just because of the free Wi-Fi, actually. But it is quite interesting. Now, I have to say, I went in there and I did not have a bad meal in Portugal or Spain. Not one bad meal. It was astounding. The food is fantastic. In fact, I would say in those countries, it's hard to starve. You'd have to go out of your way to starve in those two countries. The food is very well prepared. There's a lot of it. And this is the thing that's the real kicker. It's reasonably priced. It seems that when we want good food here, there's a difference. There's a difference between, and I won't mention the names, but certain lower scale or lower quality chain restaurants, mid-scale chain restaurants, and then upscale restaurants, which typically aren't necessarily franchised, but that they're their own entity in and of themselves. And you see the difference in the pricing, and the difference in pricing is accordingly based on supposedly the quality. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't expensive restaurants in Europe. Of course, there are. But what I'm talking about is the fact that food and high quality food is available to the population, and for the most part, it's reasonably priced. And I'm going to give you some examples. So I went in to a gelato operation, a small scale gelato operation. It was in the center of Guimarães. Which, and Guimarães is sort of in north central part of Portugal. It's about an hour north of Porto, and I went to Porto, and of course that is where the world famous port houses actually are, and they grow the grapes about an hour down the Douro River. And if you go west on the Douro River, that's where all the vines are, and they're grown on terraced plots. And then the grapes are harvested, and they're made into port wine, and then they're finished off in these port houses. So anyways, Guimarães is about an hour north of there. And I went into a gelato shop in Guimarães, and it is amazing. They had a great selection of gelato, different types of gelato, I had a lemon flavored gelato. Fantastic. And do you know how much it was? $2. $2 Canadian. Equivalent gelato here in North America will be, $4.25, $4.50 for the same thing, for the exact same thing, the exact same size. And this was with a waffle cone. So it leads me to question, why is there such a disparity in pricing? Now, certainly, if you compare a country like Portugal to compare a country like Canada, you've got different aspects altogether. You've got a country, Portugal is a much smaller population. Certainly, it's an older country. But the disparity in pricing, if you look at another aspect, let's look at gas, for example. Probably, I guess when I was there, it was about $2.40 a liter for gas. This is for, like, I guess regular unleaded 87 octane. And so here we're dealing with gas prices today that are in the $1.25, $1.30 a liter range. So certainly gas is more expensive there. But when you take a look at food prices, why is there such a disparity in food price? I mean, we have dairy operations here. We produce ice cream here. Why is it twice as much money here? You know, where is in the value chain is this disparity occurring? And this is the other thing that I think is really important to note. We talk, and I certainly know of the research that, and it's been written about endlessly about the epidemic of diabetes type 2, adult onset diabetes, you know, related to obesity that's occurring in North America with our diet, and especially in certain parts of North America. Southern states being one area that's got an extremely high rate of type 2 diabetes, you know, correlated with obesity. You don't see obese people in at least where I was. You don't see excessively obese people. It's just not. I mean, there'll be stocky people and people that, you know, if you want to look at the Earth grandmother paradigm or whatever, you know, the stereotype that you'll see as far as people. But people walk a lot. They walk a lot, and I think the diet is better in many respects. There's certainly the food is extremely fresh. It's in many cases it's harvested that day or caught that day before being consumed. There's a real connection between growers and vendors and consumers, and it's a cycle that hasn't necessarily been broken. And I'm wondering, you know, we look at here in North America, why there is this endemic of diabetes and obesity. There's differences in quality of food, and the higher, so-called the higher quality food, the fresher the food is, the more recently it's picked, even the more local it is, that's going to lead to much higher pricing. And I understand that in a way, I'm a firm advocate that farmers, that growers get paid a fair price for what they produce, and they're not treated like sharecroppers, which unfortunately I see could be a situation that's starting to rear its ugly head again in agriculture in North America. When you look at consolidation, when you look at the number of family farms that are ceasing operation, when you look at the average farm income across Canada, which is a negative income, quite ridiculous, actually. And, you know, so you're basically in overall looking at support payments for people to remain in agriculture, which is really ridiculous. And this whole aspect of local, I mean, the show is called Locavore. And what I see in Europe is that, I mean, they do talk about local, and you do see there's some retail chains, grocery chains. They're called Jumbo and Continente. And Lidl, sort of a lower end food chain, although still good, but Continente is sort of a higher end chain, and they do have local producers highlighted a bit, but not to the extent here that we see local food being highlighted. And I guess trying to understand why that is local there has always been. It's never gone away. Local agriculture, local food production has always been there. Certainly, countries like Spain and Portugal can produce items that countries like England and Germany can't. So I guess, you know, there'll be, you know, for example, melons or certain hot weather crops that will be produced in southern Europe and exported to northern Europe. But in many cases, local has always been there, and the fact that there are local producers, I mean, that's still there. Although certainly it's an issue that they're facing as well too, with young people not staying on the land and certainly migrating to the cities. But regardless, you have this disparity in food prices here. And, you know, we look at local as this sort of relatively recent phenomenon, and really it isn't. We have had agriculture and family farms since people, at least from European descent, have come to North America. And it's only in, I would say, the last few decades that you got into this consolidation and, you know, distribution costs being relatively cheap and the price of gas for a long time being, I suppose, relatively cheap. And therefore, it made somewhat economic sense to grow melons in Nogales, Arizona, and have them shipped up to Toronto, Ontario, you know, a distance of several thousand kilometers. And now we're seeing with gas prices and also crop failures that this is not the case. And food is becoming more expensive. And all you have to do is go into the grocery store and take a look at the size of packaging and what you're paying for the size of packaging. Cereal is probably the best example of that. You're paying a lot more for a lot less than even 5 years ago if you check out the cereal aisle in your local grocery store. So the question is, what do we have to do here to make good food affordable for people here in North America? Because there, it's strikingly affordable. As I said, it is hard, at least where I was, it's hard to starve. The quality of food is extremely high. The food is reasonably priced. I'll give you another example. Beer. You could go now, and this is, we could talk about beer and you know, how we have access to beer here. And I used to work in the brewing industry, so I understand it fairly well. You know, we've got either the beer store or the LCBO. That's where you can buy beer. Well, of course, in there, in Europe, you can buy it in any corner store. And I went into this one chain, and they had German Pilsner, 25 cents a can. So essentially for $9, and then I'm putting it into Canadian dollars here. I'm converting from the euro to Canadian dollars. So essentially for $9 Canadian, you could have a 2-4 of a fairly good quality German Pilsner beer. $9. You pay probably about $36 to $40 here for the equivalent product, you know, and obviously there's shipping costs involved. But even if you looked at a local Pilsner, a locally brewed Pilsner, you'd still be spending, you know, $36 for $40, probably more for a 2-4, especially if it was a specialty beer. And if you go into the LCBO and you get these cans, you can spend between $2 and $3 for a can. So you're looking at something where the 3 to 4 times the pricing. And I'm trying to figure out why. And then we look at wine. Now, wine, again, is ubiquitous in Europe. And Portugal, by the way, is one of these undiscovered treasures for wine. The quality of their wine production, I mean, has really increased considerably in the last 10 years. And I had some fantastic bottles of wine, some very complex reds, probably grown in the southern part of Portugal, 14% alcohol, just a great overall experience, and they'd be like $6 Canadian a bottle. You'd spend $20, maybe more, a bottle here for the same quality in wine. So again, why the disparity? Why the disparity here? I mean, we're looking at something that's more than 3 times the price for the equivalent product here. And I'm a real advocate for local agriculture and local food being available, but it cannot be only for the rich or the economic elite. It's got to be available to everybody. So what are we doing to address this? Again, as I say, there's some excellent producers here and excellent processors here in the Guelph area and in Southern Ontario and in Canada in general. There are some excellent small-scale growers and processors producing any number of food products. But typically, those products, especially because they're local, are going to be priced high. And you would think, okay, fine, I want the grower to make a living. Definitely want the grower to make a living, for sure. But still, you look at it and you say to yourself, why is there a disparity? Why are things 2, 3, 4 times the price that they would be in Europe? And I wouldn't say the standard of living is lower where I was. In fact, it's higher. If you take a look at transit, the ability to get around, the quality of life, everybody goes to cafes. Everybody goes to cafes. They sit and they talk and whatever. And they're the design of the cities, you know, is is fantastic. How they keep the central part of the city vibrant, and then they build around that core, and you can easily get to it. And how, this is the other thing that I was struck by, how Europeans basically take cities that are hundreds of years old and put very modern structures either within them or adjacent to them is quite astounding. And we could really learn a lot about taking heritage buildings and in North America here, which obviously is not as old, and putting the modern with, juxtaposing the modern with the older here. Nonetheless, the quality of life is every bit as good there as it is here, and in some respects there are things that are different for sure. But it gets back to the question for me is, when you look at the things that we need, food, clothing, shelter, well, let's just take a look at food. And this is what this show concentrates on. Why are things more expensive here, and very much more expensive here than elsewhere? I mean, if you look at Europe, they don't produce oil other than in the North Sea. So, or Norway. So, other than England and Norway being oil producers, you're really looking at the cost of fuel being incredibly high there. The cost of fuel, we're producers here. We produce, and yet the cost of fuel is high, but certainly not as high in Europe. So, why are food prices that much higher here? Why do you have to spend more to get the equivalent quality in food? You know, and this is the thing. So if the growers are, you know, struggling to make a fair wage, a fair salary for what they're doing, for their hard work, or the processors are struggling, where is the disconnect here? And is it in the markup in the value chain and in the brokerage and how that's actually done? And this is what we have to look at. We have to look at valuation. You look at the United States. What's just happened recently? Well, they raised their debt ceiling. They were at $14 trillion in debt, and now they're probably going to go up to $17 trillion. I mean, who knows? These numbers get thrown around. But essentially, for every person in the United States, they had this debt clock, and they were saying every person in the U.S. owed $120,000. $120,000. Well, if you're in that much in debt, how do you capitalize a new business? How can you possibly have a new business occur? And if you were, let's say, somebody in the agri-food business, you want to get involved in agriculture and producing a local product, well, what are the constraints? First of all, land, access to land. That's something I saw in Europe. Yes, there are cities, but there's also farms, and there's farms around the cities, and they've got a much better way of integrating agriculture with the urban environment than we do here. And I don't know why that is. You would think, being a younger country, we could learn from older countries' mistakes and also things they do well. But we don't have that here. And if you take a look, for example, at U-Pick operations, let's say you wanted to pick blueberries high in antioxidants, very good for you, and you wanted to make, let's say, jam or something out of blueberries. You'd have to go from Guelph. There, I guess, maybe Andrew Scenic Acres. That's in the Milton area. But there's not too many places that you could go to pick blueberries, for example. And this is the thing. I'm finding that the availability, peaches is another example. The people that are growing them are decreasing in numbers. There's consolidation, or it's just not happening as people are getting out of it and land is getting into development. These are some very real questions we have to address here. And it comes down to food security. You know, I think if you want to take a look at human health, you are what you eat. And you have to have access to reasonably priced, high quality food, or you grow it yourself. Now, I have a garden. I try and grow as what I can in the garden. I'd like to grow more, but I grow a lot of greens and spinach and some specialty tomatoes, carrots, beets, which I'm waiting for, and a few culinary herbs as well, too. And I know there's a lot of people that do have their own gardens, and they try and grow what they can. But we have to have a different paradigm here. We have to have something that's going to allow people to be able to either grow their own food or have access to high-quality food that's reasonably priced. And when somebody has to make a decision between rent, for example, or utility bills and food, I think we have to really take a look at the way society is organized right now. Everybody, it should be a human right that everybody has access to affordable, high quality food. Certainly there are differences. I was in Ottawa recently, and I went into a chain pizza franchise operation, and I ordered a Panzerotti. And I got a little bit sick from that Panzerotti. It was pre-made. It wasn't very good. If I went into Europe to order the same thing, I guarantee you the quality would be better. Now, why is that? You know, we grow wheat. We grow grain here, and we have hog operations here. We grow tomatoes here. Everything that you would need to make that Panzerotti is grown here. It's grown here. It can be grown here. And yet, you know, you spend $5 on it and it's not that good. Now in Europe, I could probably spend $3 on it and it would be fantastic. There's a problem here. And we've got to rectify this problem as far as quality food and having that being available to people. Now, I've spent on this show, a number of episodes highlighting local growers, whether they be growing vegetables or fruits or being involved in beer or wine production, whether they grow culinary herbs, or they raise chickens, or are involved in beekeeping, or involved in, you know, ultimately in taking those raw products and putting them into a menu like they do at Borealis and the Woolly. But really, you know, we need more of these operations, and we need sort of a way to have an economy of scale with these operations so we can have affordability in food and in processed food that is of a certain quality here in Canada. And this is the thing. When you see the disparity here, it's really quite striking. Europe is just a fantastic place for different food experiences. And I'll give you an example. I went into a Brazilian-style pasta restaurant in a town called Vizela in Portugal. And I had an amazing meal for about $10 Canadian. It was just absolutely superb. And the equivalent meal would probably be here $20 to $25 easily. Again, why the disparity? Because we can grow here. We've proven we can grow here. So, we have to really think about what we're doing here. Local food is great. Supporting local food initiatives is great. But I'm afraid that the movement itself is going to be hurt severely unless we can have some sort of way of scaling it up, maintaining quality. And when I say scaling it up, I'm talking about getting more people involved in production and growing, making it, economically viable for people to become involved in producing and processing, and then maintaining quality and being able to have a certain economies of scale so that we can have certain distribution networks that allow people to distribute it, and the markup for the product is not so great. I'd love to have a gelato here for $3 as opposed to $4.50 or $5. I really would, with a waffle cone. If I can have that gelato for $2 in Europe, equivalent quality with a waffle cone, you know, I'm asking myself, why is there that disparity? I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. And it's something we have to take a look at. I again, as I said, you know, it's important that growers and processors and vendors and distributors make a living. But there's something not right in the food chain when quality products are priced so high that people have to make, you know, food choices. And, you know, they can occasionally have something that's of fairly high quality. And, you know, we're looking at, I think, some very, very large issues here that we have to, you know, when I do this show, it's not just about the technical aspects of production. It's about the sociology. It's about the psychology of it. It's about the economics of it.